This episode is brought to you by Shopify. Selling a little or a lot, Shopify helps you do your thing, however you ka-ching. Ka-ching. Come on, guys, we talked about this. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify's there to help you grow. Whether you're selling scented soap or offering outdoor outfits, Shopify helps you sell everywhere. From their all-in-one e-commerce platform to their in-person POS system, wherever and whatever you're selling, Shopify's got you covered. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout, 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Sell more with less effort thanks to Shopify Magic, your AI-powered all-star. And once you start selling, Shopify makes getting paid simple by instantly accepting every type of payment. What I love about Shopify is how, no matter how big you want to grow, Shopify gives you everything you need to take control and take your business to the next level. You want to grow big? Shopify. You want to grow small? Shopify. You want to grow medium rare? Also Shopify. Shopify powers 10% of all commerce in the United States, and Shopify is the global force behind Allbirds, Rothy's, and Brooklinen, and millions of other entrepreneurs of every size across 175 countries. Plus, Shopify's award-winning help is there to support your success every step of the way. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Sign up for a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/ifanboy, all lowercase. Go to shopify.com/ifanboy now to grow your business no matter what stage you're in. shopify.com/ifanboy.
Hey, you're listening to an iFanboy special edition podcast, Conan the Barbarian. I'm Paul Montgomery, and you're listening to an iFanboy special edition podcast on Conan the Barbarian in 3D. And joining me for the special edition podcast is Mr. Matt Adler.
Hey there, folks.
Hey, so we're talking about the update to the 1982 Arnold Schwarzenegger film of the same name, Conan the Barbarian. Obviously, many, many comics, Roy Thomas, lots of stuff going on at Dark Horse throughout the decades. But it was originally created by Robert E. Howard. And so this is Conan the Barbarian's latest film installment iteration, starring Jason Momoa and Rachel Nichols, Stephen Lang, Rose McGowan, Ron Perlman, lots of other folks that probably played orcs in past lives, judging by their teeth. But this is directed by Marcus Nispel, and let's get right into it. It's probably a gimme that this is not a great movie.
Yeah, I think you could pretty much talk to any critic about that, and they'd give you the same answer on that.
It's a gimme in that I think standing in line, you know that this is not going to be a great movie. If you've been doing this for a while, if you've been going to movies for in your life, and if you've seen the trailer, it's not high quality filmmaking. It's not anything special. But the question, sort of in my mind, was, is it still going to be effing metal? Because it is Conan, and so it could be, the original Conan the Barbarian, the Schwarzenegger film, that's not a great movie, but it's a lot of fun to watch anyway.
It's a good popcorn movie.
Yeah. It is a good popcorn movie, at least the first one. Maybe not Conan the Destroyer, but Conan the Barbarian, that's with James Earl Jones and Schwarzenegger, and especially if you listen to it with a commentary track. So that just came out on that was just reissued on Blu-ray, so you should go check that out and listen to the commentary track with Schwarzenegger and the director talking about everything and just basically it being like Schwarzenegger's first time watching the movie and reacting to it wide-eyed and making weird sexist comments, and it's kind of fun. But as for this one, you saw this with your fiance.
Yeah, and I felt so guilty afterwards. I really shouldn't have subjected her to this. It was pretty, as far as just pure graphic violence gore, it's right up there, pretty much with any kind of horror movie, maybe Saw. It's pretty brutal. And if you're bringing someone that is faint of heart, doesn't like to see those gory things, it's probably not a good idea.
Yeah, it's and it starts off right off the bat with what I'd consider a Conanian section, where they say that Conan the Barbarian was born in battle. His mother was a warrior, just like his father Ron Perlman, with his crazy beard. And she's in battle, and she's wearing this big like breastplate thing that goes over her swollen belly, and she's fatally wounded and like lies dying in the middle of this battlefield on this cart. And Corin, Ron Perlman, comes to help her out, and she wants to see her baby before she dies. And so he cuts her open and pulls out baby Conan.
And an emergency C-section.
Emergency C-section. and shows the baby to her just as she's dying, and asks her to name her son. And she says his name is Conan, she says with her unibrow. And Corin, in the middle of the battlefield, lifts this bloody naked baby up into the air, sort of like the Lion King, and screams. And those dramatic moments sort of work in the 80s, but like here I sort of winced when I saw that.
There was an awful lot of screaming going on in the movie, you know, just at random moments sometimes, it seems.
Yeah, people just yell, and sometimes people yell and it's like a horse noise when they yell. Yeah. You noticed there's a battle a little bit later on with young Conan, and you might have seen that there was a portion of that video sequence that they released online, and you could see young Conan put an egg in his mouth and run out for sort of a youth ritual where whoever comes back from this obstacle course with the egg in their mouth still intact gets to fight alongside the other warriors in Samaria. And he goes out with the other young men. He's a little bit younger than them. And there's this raid by this other group. And they sound like the Tusken Raiders for some reason. And they're groaning and howling and making weird noises. And this is, I mean, aside from the born in battle thing in the beginning, you get this little kid Conan fighting against these guys with like weird mangled teeth, and
there's no background given to them. We have no idea why they look like monsters, where they come from, anything like that. They're just random bad guys that look like monsters.
Yeah, but they look like they should be like raiding in like, you know, Minas Tirith or something from Lord of the Rings. Like they look bizarre, and
they're easily frightened, but they'll soon be back in greater numbers.
Yeah. I should mention we do also get an introduction by Morgan Freeman, which took me off guard. I was like, is that Morgan Freeman narrating this? And
that was pretty random too. Let's get Morgan Freeman to do the introduction. Sure, why not?
Yeah, it's he's not doing anything. He's probably like at the studio for something else. And was like, would you mind reading this copy we have for Conan and reading about Hyboria and stuff? And he's basically giving the background on the main thread of the movie is the mask of Acheron, which they put virgins on like a big circle thing, and
he's trying to resurrect his wife, and it was all a big MacGuffin. It was just an excuse for them to just
so you get this big sequence sort of in the beginning, and it's got this weird filter over it to make it look like it's part of an antique map, you know, with like tea stains on it and stuff. And it's sort of, you know, like they built this mask that could, you know, unleash hell upon the earth, but then the mask was broken and it was scattered throughout the world, like, you know, like the rings. And so it's the idea is that Stephen Lang from Avatar, not quite as broad and hyperbolic and over the top as he was in Avatar in that mech suit, but still kind of wide-eyed and crazy, which I think is appropriate for this movie, as the bad guy, Kalar Zim.
Invader Zim.
Spelled a little differently, but he's Zim, and he's basically trying to get all the pieces of the mask together. And in this opening act of the movie, he's trying to build the mask and get the last part. And in Samaria, that's where the last part is hidden. And it goes to Conan's father, Corin, who's protecting it. And so that you have this big battle with the Tusken Raiders and everybody, and everybody's getting killed. And then Conan's father is killed by having molten steel poured on him. And Conan is left orphaned and alone, and that his father's sword has been stolen by Zim's daughter, Rose McGowan, Marique, who's a creepy witch character.
Extremely creepy.
Looks like
Christina Ricci.
Looks like Kate Goslin with alopecia. is how I'd say it. And we have a text review up on the site, and that's sort of if Frank Frazetta was to design Kate Goslin with alopecia and leather wedge heels, that's what Marique would be. And she has these metal finger talons that she puts on, and she can give these lethal slices and stuff. And she's doing a lot of lapping at blood to see if there's pure blood from the Asheronians in there, because they're trying to track down both the part of the mask, which they get at the beginning, and they also need a virgin with pure Asheronian blood.
She's apparently got a very discerning sense of taste.
Yeah, she's a discerning palate, yeah. and she's got kind of a weird thing for a dad, and she looks like her mother did, and so there's some creepy stuff going on there.
Yeah, I was really worried in that scene that scene was going to go somewhere, and thankfully they cut it off before it went anywhere.
Yeah, it was going in some weird directions, but yeah, so this is basically it's a fairly simple story going from there, where it's Conan is, as he grows up, is tracking down the different people that were involved in the murder of his father and the death of all of his people, including a guy who got his nose cut off by Conan himself. And he eventually puts his finger through the guy's face through the nose hole. And there's torturing scenes going on there.
That actually really bothered me as far as the character goes. I mean, you know, I'm not that squeamish, but mm-hmm. From the books and the comics, you know, Conan is not afraid to kill somebody. He's, you know, certainly, you know, the savage sword of Conan and so on and so forth. But he's supposed to be distinguished from the so-called civilized people in that he has a sort of code of honor, and that, yes, in that if he faces an enemy, he's going to give you a clean kill. He's just going to kill you, and that's it. He's not going to torture. He's not going to do this. And this guy, this Conan in this movie was a lot more sadistic than I've seen in the books and in the comics.
You mentioned Saw earlier, and he even borrows a trick from Saw, where that same guy with the nose, a little bit of a spoiler here, that guy is a warden for a big prison camp, and Conan takes the key to all the cells off of the guy's neck. He's wearing it as a necklace, and he forces it down the guy's throat, and, you know, forces it down with some ale or whatever. And then he leads him out into the quad of the prison and tells the prisoners that this guy has the key to all the cells in his stomach, and leaves one guy with a knife. And the guy says, "You said you wouldn't kill me." And he says, "I said I wouldn't kill you."
Yeah.
So pretty sadistic there. And then, you know, it's a lot of lead up to just fight scenes and swordplay throughout. There aren't a whole lot of sequences or set pieces that stand out, because it's just fight, fight, fight with a little bit of exposition in between. Yeah.
I'll tell you, I thought one, you know, part that was, I guess you would call it the highlight of the movie, was the scene in the tavern. You know, my fiance and I got a chuckle out of the scene where they're arm wrestling and Conan spits in his face to win the arm wrestling match. If you remember, he spit mm-hmm. the beer in his face. Yeah. And we got a good chuckle out of that. I would have liked to have seen more of that kind of stuff to balance out the violence and the brutality, because if you read the stories, Conan does have a sense of humor. It's kind of a twisted sense of humor, but he does have a sense of humor. And that was really, I felt like, one of the only scenes in the movie where we really got a sense of that. I actually really enjoyed the character of Artis, his partner.
Yes.
I thought he was brought a good balance in the movie, but towards the end of the movie, they basically just cut him out of the movie, sent him off on a ship while Conan went off and did his thing, you know?
Yeah, it's kind of an interesting character. He's a little bit older than Conan. He's sort of a pirate captain, I guess.
Yeah,
on a pirate ship.
I think from the Robert E. Howard stories, he'd be from Kush, which is sort of like a fictional African country.
Yeah. And yeah, and this is like, it's sort of interesting in that the world of Conan, the world of like in Hyboria and stuff is, it's fairly reminiscent of like the Middle East or Northern Africa.
Right.
But it's, everything's a little bit different. Yeah. And we see one of the cool things is seeing the establishing shots of all the different cities and the port towns and stuff, like where they had that bar scene that you were talking about, and some of the like mountain citadels, and there's a skull shaped cave, and all of that is pretty cool. Otherwise, it's kind of claustrophobic because all of the traveling is through Conan gets on a horse, leaves, and then you get the establishing shot of where he's gone. There's no real sense of him actually journeying.
My fiance commented on the exact same thing. She said, all of a sudden he's on this ship. When are they getting on the ship? When is, you know, any of that happening? It was just a random transition.
Mm-hmm. That's something that I missed from sort of like the 1982 film. I'm thinking of Schwarzenegger on a horse and just traveling alone in the desert or just walking through the desert. And you get a sense of time, and I thought that original film,
epic.
Yeah, it does. It you get the width and breadth of this ancient world and all of these different coast towns and big cities, and there's a thieves city, and here it's just like, it's sort of like a modern jet set kind of thing where he hops on a plane and gets to another city, which works for a contemporary film, but for something like this, the road aspect is really important. And I think about the original film where Conan is a young man and he's wandering through the desert, and he eventually gets to that wheel that he has to push as a kid, and they show you that sort of time passing through montage where he becomes older and you see that he gets bigger and it's easier for him to push that wheel working as a slave. And so they had a better sense of how to progress time. And here it's just all through establishing shots and cuts, and it feels like cheating in a way, and it also makes the film feel pretty small.
When in doubt, go for the montage.
When in doubt, go for the montage, yeah. But let's talk about Momoa's characterization of Conan some more. And I agree with you. I really like that scene in the bar where they're just arm wrestling and he's flirting with all these bare-chested harem girls that they've rescued. And I think about the famous quote from The Phoenix on the Sword from 1932, one of the Robert E. Howard stories. And this is Conan. Hither came Conan, the Cimmerian, black-haired, sullen-eyed, sword in hand, a thief, a reaver, a slayer, with gigantic melancholies and gigantic mirth, to tread the jeweled throne of the earth under his sandaled feet. So
we needed more mirth.
We needed more. Well, no, actually, I think we got a lot of mirth in that moment, and we got a lot of just the violent reaver and the barbarian and all his action scenes. I don't think we got the gigantic melancholies in terms of him being like contemplative and thoughtful, because this is a guy who becomes a king of nations, you know, towards the end of his life. He does become a king, and that's another great moment from the 1982 film, where you get a narration over him sitting on a throne, and it just feels very like there's so much gravitas to that. And here you get a little moment towards the end where
he learned his lesson.
Yeah.
What did he learn? They showed nothing that he learned in the movie. So, I mean, that scene at the end struck me as so false, you know. Okay, they echo his father's words, you must learn the sword or whatever. What did he learn? They didn't show that he learned anything except that just keep chasing the guy till you get him, or I guess that's the only lesson I saw he learned.
He said this sword will be yours one day. That they forged this sword together when Conan's a child, he and his father, and they forged this sword, and unfortunately when Corin is murdered, Marik steals the sword and has it through till the end of the film. Conan unsurprisingly reclaims the sword, but his father had said this sword will be yours one day, but you must first understand it. And he thinks about it for a while, and it looks like he's going to leave the sword there because he hasn't earned it yet. But then he lifts the sword up to the sky in sort of a He-Man moment and of course screams.
I was tempted in the theater to shout, Thundercats, oh!
Yeah, or I have the power! Exactly. So it's there's a lot of action in the movie, but it's, I think, it's sort of the Transformers thing where so much is going on and there's some storytelling problems, and that I don't know what's happening, or it's too much is going on too fast. And the other thing that I say in the review is that it's sort of stunningly unremarkable in terms of a visual style. There are no visuals aside from maybe the occasional establishing shot that was kind of cool design work that really wowed me. And for an action film, it just seemed like action scene, action scene, action scene, and nothing was was shot in an exciting way, in a very inventive way.
I didn't think the sword fights were done that well because there were so many quick cuts that you really didn't get a sense of flow of the action.
Mm-hmm. And we get a platforming like video game scene with those sand golems or whatever that Marouk right. summons, and they're up on this like scaffolding, this wooden scaffolding, these platforms, and they're jumping around in sort of like Prince of Persia, and it just like I never got a sense of how many of those sand creatures there were,
and where people were. I thought it was the same one reforming right. initially, but it turned out there were more, of course, you know. Mm. That wasn't pretty clear, you know.
So, okay, so we've been pretty harsh in this movie. Before we conclude, is there anything that you really liked aside from, say, that bar scene and the mirth there? But
I mean, overall, I really thought the character of Artis was, for me, the highlight of the movie. I felt he balanced out Conan, but the problem was he just wasn't in enough of the movie. Towards the end there, they just left him off on the ship. And if I can include one more gripe, although I know mm-hmm. we're supposed to be talking about the positive aspects of it, how dumb was it? They know that these villains are after this girl, and they send her back onto shore with Conan, you know, like,
yeah.
Does that make any – and, of course, she's captured immediately afterwards. But, right. you know, it just that's what they call, I believe, an idiot plot, where in order for the plot to work, the characters have to be idiots.
Have to do something dumb. Yeah, and it's like they send her up on shore, and Conan has sort of like a log cabin retreat there for when he needs to have a softcore sex scene.
Yep.
On a straw bed with just black background. And then like she has to go through like a forest to get back to the shore where the boat is alone.
She doesn't yeah. wait for Conan to wake up and escort her or anything like that. No, she has to wait till she's alone and can be captured easily.
Mm. It's a very sort of thankless role for Rachel Nichols there. I think she deserved a bit better. I think Jason Momoa deserved a better movie to be Conan, because I think he's a good Conan. He's certainly more of a magnetic personality than Schwarzenegger was. He's you believe him as that character, as a fighter, as, you know, and he's got the charm that former Conans have not had. Go ahead.
I'm sorry. I just felt like he just didn't show that much range. I mean, I haven't seen him in anything else. It's the first thing I've seen him in. So, you know, he may have that range, but I just felt he was really one note here. It was really just, I'm going to get those guys. That was his whole character through the movie, I felt.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I think it was sort of a question of wasted potential, in that the story didn't provide him those moments. Yeah. I think that given the opportunity to play, and I think like people look at Conan as sort of, he's like the savage warrior, and he just, you know, it's hack and slash adventures. But I think Conan is actually a very complex character, because he's, as you said, it's sort of separate from so-called civilized human beings. And he actually references that in the story, in that, barbarians would yeah. never do this, or yeah. you know, and it's actually the people who consider themselves civilized, the priests and clerics and kings and princes, who actually sacrifice, you know, their virgins and do all of that. Whereas in Samaria, barbarian women are warriors who fight alongside the men. And so I think, but I think there was some glimmer in Jason Momoa that I saw, that he could play the different sides, the different aspects of Conan, and I don't think that they gave him the opportunity to be that thoughtful tactician that he could be.
Yeah, I mean, I read a little bit about the development of the movie, and, you know, apparently they've been trying to get another Conan movie off the ground for years now. It was with Warner Brothers for a while, and then eventually the rights reverted. And after seeing this movie, it kind of just felt like they were, because they mentioned that they said the reason they took it back from Warner Brothers is because they were frustrated with Warner Brothers' inability to get it to the screen, and they wanted to get something to the screen. And I feel like they were just willing to get anything to the screen. It didn't matter if it was actually a good movie. They just wanted to get another Conan movie to the screen. And it disappoints me because I feel like there's going to be people who've never read a Conan story, and you're going to get an impression of the character, like you said, that he's just this mindless, you know, reaver, and there's no other dimensions to him. And there are, you know, mm-hmm. if people pick up the books, if people pick up, you know, some of the, you know, better comics, they'll see that.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I think there's a really rich world for Conan too. And then also, Rose McGowan has been attached to sort of a stalled, Red Sonja movie that they were also trying to make for years and years. And I don't think that's moving forward. And it, you know, maybe it depends on how much money this makes, but I don't see a lot of buzz around this one. It's not a very buzzable film, yeah. To use our nomenclature.
I went to see it pretty late, you know, 12:30 last night, but the theater was, even for that time, was pretty empty.
Yeah, so I saw it as a matinee, and there were very few people, and it was a pretty quiet audience. There are moments where Conan is playful, but there's nothing really funny in the movie. Aside from a guy being sent by catapult, as a dire message to Zim. But,
I also got a chuckle out of the scene where, she's, you know, scolding him, whatever, for not letting her go. And he stuffs a gag in her mouth.
There's some laughs at the, kind of the sexism and Conan being very dismissive, and just saying, walk, get off the horse, stop. So it could be problematic for some audiences, and it's a very difficult character because he's very violent, as we said, very dismissive of other people. He looks at Rachel Nichols' character Tamara in a new dress when she gets on the ship and says she looks like a harlot, he's sort of saying you shouldn't, like, you're better than being a harlot. You should be wearing armor because you're a warrior just like me. And he comes to a point where he does respect her. But yeah, it's a difficult character to root for sometimes. But yeah, it's a problematic movie. I think there are a few interesting things going on. I think that the Marika character is kind of interesting. Rose McGowan puts in at least an interesting bad guy performance. I think that Jason Momoa is a little bit better than you think he is, but I think we're pretty much agreeing that this is a rental if you're kind of interested in it. You know, walk, don't run, you know, early next year when this is out on DVD and Blu-ray. But otherwise, don't hurry up for this one. Sort of the summer comic book films going out with a bit of a whimper here. So that's our thoughts on Conan the Barbarian in 2D or 3D. And obviously, if you're going to go, might as well see it in 2D if that. I don't think it needs, well, it is a film that needs more dimensions than it has, but I don't think the 3D is really enough. So that's Conan the Barbarian. You can check out my text review on ifanboy.com and all of the other coverage, as well as the weekly Pick of the Week review and all of the stuff that me and the other staff writers and Matt Adler are working on. Thanks for joining me, Matt.
Thanks, Paul.
All right, we'll see you next time.
This show is sponsored by BetterHelp. You ever feel like you really need to get something off your chest? This is like a real thing. Like, if you're mad, if you're upset, if there's something going on, like there's often for me an idea. Maybe it's a wrong. Maybe it's a moment. It's an injustice. It's something that just you keep going on and on, over and over in your mind about it, and like that can create anger and resentment or shame, whatever it is. And very often I have found, I am not a therapist, I have found that when you let it out, when you give it voice, when you say it out loud, sometimes it makes you feel better because you've expressed it. And sometimes it makes you realize like, oh, this is not a big deal, but it's been stuck in my head. So you give voice to those things and it can make you feel a lot better. And shock of all shocks, therapy is one of those things that can help you do that. It can help you be able to say those things in a place where you don't need to worry about the repercussions of it. Work your way through it, figure out coping skills, how to get around it. You know, find ways to deal with that stuff instead of letting it fester. If you are thinking of starting therapy, if anything I said sounds familiar, you're like, oh, maybe my life would be a little better if I could deal with that kind of thing. You should give BetterHelp a try. It's fully online. It is convenient, flexible. It is suited to your schedule. That's the idea. That's what they're going for. You can fill out a brief questionnaire to get matched with a licensed therapist. That's a big deal. You can switch therapists at any time for no additional charge. That personal connection, I believe, to be super important. Again, I'm not a professional. Get it off your chest with BetterHelp. Visit BetterHelp.com/iFanboy today. You get 10% off your first month. That is BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.com/iFanboy.